Morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. I am Mark Adams, here in place of my colleague Jane Kohler, who did the excellent briefing in this case. My client, Ellen Taft, is present. Your Honors, this is a simple case.
Did you want to reserve?
Oh, I'm sorry. I would like to reserve 2 minutes, please.
Thank you.
This is a simple case. Should the trial court have granted summary judgment in favor of the co-op, and I will highlight the points made in my colleague's brief.
Well, I think the critical question is, were there material issues of fact?
Exactly, Your Honor.
As to whether your client received notice that complies with the bylaws, specifically received notice that there were repeated violations of the bylaws or policies?
Yes, the question is, that is one of the issues of material fact. I agree, Your Honor, that's the principal one.
Well, okay, that's the principal one. What are the other ones?
The other ones, the sufficiency of notice, which is a genuine issue of material fact.
Well, isn't that part of the first one?
Yes.
Okay, is there anything else?
Could a jury find that?
Well, that's, again, part of the first one.
Right.
So I think the critical question is, what are the material issues of fact as to whether Ms. Taft received notice that complied with the bylaws? As I understand it, there's no dispute that there was an incident on June 27th.
Correct.
And is there a dispute about whether the manager called on December 6th?
There's no dispute about that. Where there is a dispute, Your Honor, is about whether an incident occurred on November the 14th.
Well, it's whether she knew that an incident occurred on the 14th or was told an incident occurred on the 14th.
She disputes that it occurred.
At all.
Yes.
But then she also disputes that she ever was told about it.
That's true.
Okay. And she disputes that she... she says she didn't receive the letter that I think was attached in opposition to or in support of summary judgment by the co-op.
Correct.
It's a December 11th or December 9th letter?
Yes, correct. She disputes that she ever received that copy until we received it as an attachment to the motion for summary judgment.
So are there any other disputes?
Yes. Did she create, quote, create an unsafe shopping environment? We contend that that is a subjective test. What is unsafe? What did she do to create an unsafe shopping environment? Did she scatter hazardous material or do anything other than object to the presence of non-service dogs?
Well, but I think you have to do is look at the letter. I mean, the April 28th letter itself says, due to your actions, including the verbal abuse of shoppers and workers, as well as your continued refusal to refrain from activity, even after repeated warnings.
And, Your Honor?
And as I understand it, you dispute that there were repeated warnings. And what else do you dispute?
The nature of the so-called abuse of staff, mistreatment of staff. Abuse of staff is in the eyes of the beholder.
So you're disputing the characterization that's set out in the letter?
Yes. In a nutshell, Your Honor, they characterize her reaction to these dogs, non-service dogs being allowed in the store. Her reaction to that was abusive to staff, mistreatment of staff. That's a jury question, Your Honor. The nature of her protestations, was she just firm in her rights as an owner of this co-op to insist upon enforcement of the rule, or was she abusive, as that term has been thrown about, such that the tender flowers who were at the cashier's stand took offense and, oh, they felt abused? That's a jury question, Your Honor, the nature of her objection. Furthermore, whether she had a right as a member of this co-op and being encouraged to offer comments for improvement of the operation, Did she go beyond the bounds of what a member is encouraged to do? Your Honor, in granting summary judgment, the trial court, as this court knows, is supposed to draw all favorable inferences from the evidence in Ms. Taft's favor. And that's not just in her favor, it is in the most favorable light. And
So what's your argument, if you could, if the court had drawn all the inferences in the light most favorable, what would the court have concluded?
The court would have granted our cross motion for summary judgment, to which they made no response.
That the notice wasn't sufficient. And the notice wasn't sufficient, why?
The notice wasn't sufficient because it was not specific. It was conclusory. It was vague and conclusory. As we said in our letter to the co-op, our letter dated May the 14th, you have alleged conclusory grounds for terminating her membership.
Well, they do say repeated. So repeated warnings. So I think we're right back to whether there were repeated warnings. And as I understand your position, it is viewed in the light most favorable to Ms. Taft. There were not repeated warnings. We only knew about June 27th, and there was this phone call on December 6th. Isn't that right?
Correct. And also the nature of those warnings, the specificity of the warnings. It doesn't matter that the co-op says, well, we warned you about this and we warned you about that. Specifically, what was she doing that they object to? They have bylaws here, and they have an article of incorporation that requires them, that constitutes a property right in the membership, and that says you must have written notice of the reasons for the proposed termination and an opportunity to respond in writing.
Well, they did give reasons,
but meaningful notice, Your Honor, conclusory. Statements like you have abused staff and you have created an unsafe shopping environment. In what manner? How is she specifically supposed to respond? She's given 10 days to respond to this, to these conclusory allegations. And it's only after she's been terminated, finally after she's been terminated in June, the board has already voted. Then they get a little more specific. Well, that's too late. That horse is already out of the barn.
Yeah. What's your response to their argument that, well, the notice must have been pretty good because she responded to the kinds of things we were worried about?
Well, we were supposing, but the fact that we suppose and try to make the best case that we can in defending her, doesn't it exonerate them from the obligation to provide reasonable notice? We're talking not about her conduct. We're talking here in this case about the adequacy and the timeliness and the specificity of notice. And there are genuine questions of material fact about this, Your Honor, viewing this in the light most favorable to our client, the non-moving party. And I think the moving party here, the co-op, must have pinched themselves to think they got a summary judgment in this case. Thank you. I'll reserve.
May it please the Court, Bill Walsh on behalf of the Seattle Co-op. Let me begin by responding to a couple of specific issues that were raised just a moment ago. With regard to the November 14th incident, in the record at Clerk's Papers 166, which is the Ms. Taft's opposition brief to the summary judgment motion below, she acknowledged that the November 14th incident occurred and then provided an explanation that she was focused on the service dog issue and denied being abusive. So there is no, actually in the record, there is no dispute that the November 14th incident did actually occur. Also, with regard to the June 25th letter advising Ms. Taft that she had been terminated or her membership had been terminated, it is a specific letter. And it's specific for a reason. It's specifically responding to the specific responses that she had in her May 14th letter. And in fact, so if you go look at the May 14th letter, it really kind of cuts through the whole adequate notice issue. Because counsel wants to say that she was supposing. Well, she did a very good job of supposing because she hit it right on the head. She knew from all of the previous communications, including the April 28th letter and all that had happened before, exactly why the co-op had taken its, the actions that it had taken. So, and she specifically provided responses to the June 27th, or what she refers to as a July 2013 incident, and then she denies that, that a November 14th incident occurred. So when the board sat down and made its decision in June, they had that information in front of them. They had her response. They had provided her adequate notice. She had responded specifically to the allegations, and then that response was considered by the board and was a basis for them to terminate her membership. Now let's focus.
That sounds like an argument that lack of adequate notice is harmless as long as the person receiving that inadequate notice guesses what's going on correctly. Is there any authority for that?
Your Honor, I actually dispute that that's my argument. I think what I'm saying is that the May 14 letter is evidence that the notice was adequate. It's not they're quibbling about whether sufficient information was available in the April 28th letter, and they're to some degree trying to isolate that. There was previous communications. There's their February letter. There's a lot of communications that precede the April 28th letter. I'm not arguing that somehow it's a gotcha. I'm arguing that there's evidence here that the notice was adequate. And by the way, as a point of procedural matter, there were cross motions here on the adequacy of notice, the sufficiency of notice. And we've cited the Washington authority, which is pretty clear that if you move for a cross, if you cross move, you're conceding that there are no issues of material fact on the issue. So that's true. That was certainly true of the trial court's review, and that's the record on de novo review here.
But I think that rule applies when there are no disputed issues of fact.
Well, I guess that's my point. They're conceding there are no issues of fact.
Well, no, they didn't. In their reply brief, what they specifically said was that they were arguing in the alternative. I mean, their cross motion says we are entitled to summary judgment on the sufficiency of the notice. In the alternative, there are material issues of fact, and then they point all of those out.
Fair enough. I disagree, but I understand what the court is saying, and so I'll take that at face value because I'm the responding party here. So let's focus on what the actual issue is, because counsel they're shifting the issue from what it really was at the trial court level and here to one that it was not, which is Washington courts don't get involved in disputes and voluntary organizations unless it looks like the organization violated its own rules or violated Washington law.
Right, so it's the bylaws that we're looking at.
So it's bylaws that we're looking at. But but Ms. Taft and her counsel are trying to shift this to she says she didn't abuse people, the co-op says she did. That's not that issue that was presented to the trial court. The issue before the trial court was whether the Seattle co-op acted reasonably. That's the issue. And whether or not there were disputed issues before the co-op, when it made its determination on the term, that's not the issue before the trial court. The issue before the trial court is simply, did the co-op act reasonably? The court there and here does not get involved in being a referee about what happened on June 27th when there was a dog with a vest on in the co-op. The court doesn't get involved in that. The court simply asks, did the co-op act reasonably? And in these circumstances, they provided her notice. They had her response. That response hasn't changed, by the way. If you compare the May 14th letter to all the briefing that has followed, nothing new has been raised in anything. There's nothing new that she's said. There's not additional evidence that she's provided. Nor is there any evidence that the co-op acted on allegations that were not somehow contained or referenced in any of the correspondence that happened before her termination. So, again, the only issue is whether or not the co-op acted reasonably. And on that issue, there are no issues of disputed fact. No one disputes what correspondence was sent when, what it says, and basically what the response was. And no one's disputing that the co-op took her response and looked at it and considered it before it made a determination. On these facts, there are no disputed facts with regard to the issue, which is whether or not the co-op acted reasonably. We're not here to decide what happened when the dogs were there and who she talked to and how she talked to them, none of which, by the way, is really materially disputed either, but that's not the issue before this court, and it wasn't the issue before the trial court. Absent questions, I'll yield the rest of my time.
2 minutes.
Thank you. A couple of points in response to Learned Counsel's argument. First of all, the nature of the letter on May the 14th, what we're concerned with here is not whether they gave their grounds for termination. It is the adequacy of those grounds. That's a question of fact, and it's a question of fact for the jury. The jury should decide, was the notice to her adequate?
I don't think it's was it adequate. Did it comply with the terms of the bylaws?
I'm talking about the content, the specifics of that. Did it give her an opportunity to reply?
Well, aren't those interrelated? I mean, the bylaws say what the notice needs to provide.
The bylaws say, I'll quote from that.
They say for cause can include.
For cause. And notice of the reasons for the termination and has an opportunity to respond in person or in writing.
Well, and it says cause can include repeated violations.
Okay. And it's a jury question, Your Honor, whether she indeed committed, quote, repeated violations, and whether those violations, supposed violations, were adequate. And the jury should be entitled to put themselves in the place of this person receiving this notice and saying, did they tell me what I did that was wrong here? How can I reply to this when these are vague and conclusory allegations? I wish to talk about shifting issues. Counsel commented that we were shifting issues in this case. They raised the business judgment rule, which does not apply here. Furthermore, that argument was not raised in the trial court. It doesn't belong here in these proceedings. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you all. Next up is Stevens versus Bellevue Farm Owners.